joins us. He's a long time, I want to say soldier because it doesn't sound right, but a long time fighter for our Second Amendment rights. It's been almost his entire career. Phil, welcome back to the Todd Herman Show.
Great to be on again with you, Todd.
Well, it's always good to have you on. You're very knowledgeable about all this stuff, and the email you sent out this morning has me rather concerned. So run us through the sequence of events here. The Seattle Times apparently got in touch with you. You're running the Save Our Security No on I-1639 campaign?
Yeah, absolutely. And they got in touch with me a few days ago for the very first time since the initiative was filed, and wanted me or a representative of the campaign to come to their editorial board meeting at the end of the month. And my response to them was, you know, first of all, I was perplexed as to why my first interaction with them was going to be coming to an editorial board meeting when they previously didn't care what I or the campaign had to say about the initiative. And then secondly, I was extremely suspicious because they've run a series of editorials and articles that basically tell me what they want and the direction that they're going to go on this endorsement, and I have full confidence that they are definitely going to endorse 1639. So I requested that they first do an article from the other perspective, from my campaign's perspective. And at first they tried to ignore it in the emails, and then this person basically said, you know, that's basically not going to happen, and you can come to the editorial board meeting or not. And I'm not going to allow myself and the campaign to be used by the Seattle Times to basically pretend they're nonpartisan on this or any other issue. And they do have an opinion, and they have a right to say it, but they don't have a right to basically pretend that they don't have an opinion, and they're always going to be nonpartisan and non-biased and 100% factually correct and all that. So I withdrew myself from this meeting and challenged them to do an article from the other perspective.
Yeah, I think that's a fair ask. You know, I assume you agree with me that having local investigative journalists, even if it leans to the left, is important.
Yeah, absolutely. I love some of the investigative journalism that the Times does, and but unfortunately, on some things, they don't want to tell both sides of the story. And I don't know whether or not it's the ownership or the management of the Times, the staff at the Times, or the advertisers. But it's important if you want to be a professional news publication that you have both sides of the story. And they're just not doing that. They contacted me for the very first time. To come to their editorial board meeting when they've already run several articles about this initiative and several bills this year, and they haven't cared to contact me over any of that.
Well, I mean, I guess I'm torn a little bit, Phil. I mean, they invited you, they didn't invite me, and they probably won't. But I guess I respect the decision you made to not go. I respect what you offered them. Have you offered to write something directly for them?
You know, I'd be happy to, I'd be happy to give commentary, direct them towards people that they can interview that this will seriously impact. And, I'd be glad to do anything, but it just seems like they don't want to budge, unfortunately. And so I this challenge remains, and if they want to accept it, I'd gladly appear at their editorial board meeting. But until they do a non-biased article or have a something like a guest column by me or, you know, someone like Alan Gottlieb or someone like this, I'm just not going to play that game where they pull me in to sort of pretend to be non-biased on this issue and use me as sort of a prop in that editorial process. I'm not going to allow myself to be used like that.
Yeah, I don't expect the Times to let you or me determine what unbiased writing looks like, but I would expect them to request from you an editorial. I would expect them to want to run that. I would any time that Nick Hanauer or someone who is in favor of this initiative, any time they want to come on this program, they are welcome. All they need to do is put in a phone call, and they'll be treated respectfully. I will disagree with them. I will destroy all their arguments in a debate because their initiative is illegal on many fronts, and it's also unconstitutional and unconscionable. But I'll do that in a sound way. Shifting gears, you are running the campaign against 1639. I want to get into how that's going, but I want to ask you personally, as a guy who spent a long time, your long career in this, Phil, and you're a young guy, but you've been at it a long time. What is to you the most egregious portion of this initiative?
Oh gosh, I mean, there's so much of it. It's pretty bad on all accounts. I think for people just primarily concerned with their constitutional rights, there's several issues. Number one, privacy, not just your medical privacy, but your information. It's going to be with several different agencies now. That's getting pretty scary for me. And a lot of other people, on basically Fourth Amendment grounds. And so there's all kinds of issues with that. There's issues with defending yourself in your own home, forcing individuals very vaguely, I might add, to submit to these so-called safe storage measures that they're trying to implement. And then also there's big issues with stuff like medical privacy and taxation. So there's all these different issues out there. And some breaking news today, by the way, the Office of Fiscal Management for the state of Washington, they issued their analysis today of the three initiatives. And they were unable to determine the cost that 1639 will actually have because it's so convoluted and confusing. And these are professionals that,
okay.
So there you go. I mean, it's the state of Washington is uneven able to determine a lot of this stuff, what this initiative means and what it does. So it's just a nonstop clown show with this thing, and I just hope that the voters turn out big time if this is going to be on the ballot in November and they vote it down, because it's a really bad initiative. It's probably the worst gun control initiative ever to be on the ballot in Washington State, and that's probably saying a lot.
Yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, I've told people, and it's from time to time I'll get conservatives saying to me, well, it doesn't really make you give up your health care rights and or privacy in health care. It doesn't waive your HIPAA. I now have an image of that portion of the bill saved to my laptop so I can send it to people saying, page number this, here's the image. And these are like listeners to my show or big supporters saying, hey, Todd, I love you, but I'd rather verify than trust. I don't think you got this right. This can't waive your HIPAA rights. And then what you're talking about, Phil, of the safe storage thing, you know what? My gun is safest to me, in my judgment, next to me at my bedside. I have a pistol and then a shotgun in a secondary location. Those are perfectly safe locations to me. My guns exist to protect my family and to shoot someone who breaks into my house and attempts to harm them. And they definitely are vague. They aren't saying that you have to lock them up when not in use, etc. And I'll tell you this, Phil, it's about tripwires. It's about setting up a series of wires so that you, no matter what you do as a gun owner, you're breaking the law. That's exactly what this is about, and it's by design. How do people get in touch with you to help you fight this?
Yeah, absolutely. Go on saveoursecurity.net, and you can sign up there to volunteer or donate. And I'd love to hear from people as well. I have a feature on the volunteer page where you can write me any message that you want to. And just go to saveoursecurity.net, and I've got a lot more information going up there every week. And sign up to volunteer or donate there. And if you want, just read about it. You know, if you're not sure, just read about it. And I've linked directly to the initiative itself, so you can read it there as well.
Well, I appreciate you, Phil Watson. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for always fighting for the Second Amendment, and I hope to see you soon. Appreciate you, sir.
Thanks, Todd. Love the show.
Hey, thank you. Todd Emmert Show will continue on AM 770 KTTH. By the way, speaking of that, let me see if I still have this. You want to read this thing? You want to read... where is this? Oh, here it is. So... No, it's not it. Okay, I'll find the blog we did where I list the 17 items that are in 1639. It's supposed to be a single item state. It has 17 items. I'll get that back up on the text line so you can read about those. It's an insane, insane initiative and must be voted down. We'll come back on the Todd Emmert Show on AM 770 KTTH. Nice, Tom. Welcome back to the Todd Emmert Show on AM 770 KTTH on the Greater East Side, 94.5 FM. Part humor in this segment because it is absolutely hilarious, and part tragedy because it's absolutely true. There is, I believe, and I think I've spoken with you on the air about this before, I believe that that evil ideas sort of operate like a spirit. And I think those ideas just find new ways to spread. And I think that we think they're dead and then they come back. And I speak specifically of the new left and their absolute fascination with anti-Semitism and destruction of Israel. And it's okay to endorse that now in the new left. And it's part humorous because it involves the... I tried out a theory with this lady, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. I tried out a theory that she used to be, and she did, she used to be an Adam Smith free marketeer. She wrote about being an Adam Smith free marketeer. She espoused that. I tried out a theory that the reason she can't answer how to pay for her things is because she knows it can't be done. She's an opportunist. I'm telling you, I'm done. I am done ascribing to her any scheming ability, any smarts. I don't know how she made it through college. Because in this weekend of listening to this woman who is part of this dynamic of wanting to destroy the nation of Israel. I'm not kidding. The people she's running around with, the people she's endorsing, some of the most radical people running for Congress, like a woman named Ilhan Omar, is running to replace Keith Ellison, who, by the way, you saw this? Ellison's former girlfriend, the son of Ellison's former girlfriend, says he has video of Ellison smacking this lady around, calling her terrible names, beating her, belittling her. Ellison's running to be attorney general of the state of Minnesota because George Soros is paying big money to get attorneys general like smack or like a heroin Dan Satterberg in office. And the part-time attorney general, full-time secret gubernatorial campaign donations, Sideshow Bob. He wants more people like that. So Ellison's running to get a statewide office in Minnesota as the attorney general. Why? Because he says he'll sue Trump. Well, now turns out there may be video, literal video of him pulling this lady around by her hair. She's made a statement. And she said, yep, these things are true. I appreciate my son coming out about this. So the woman running to replace him, man, she's a real sweetheart. On Twitter, she is all over getting rid of basically the nation of Israel. And the language, again, I just do the replace the word test with this. And this woman is endorsed by Ocasio-Cortez. And a woman who goes to the web and says that Israel has hypnotized the United States. So it goes straight back to the biggest cliche. The cliched image of Jewish people has in their evil dark robes hypnotizing all the people to do the bidding of the nation of Israel. I guarantee you, if I created a cartoon or if I came on the air and said, oh, the Jews, they just hypnotized America. The Jews, if I went on and said what this woman who's being endorsed by Cortez said on Twitter. Welcome to the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KCTH. You all know that Israel's hypnotized the world. I hope God awakens a people, helps them see the evils of Israel. I mean, I'm just drawing attention to the apartheid Israeli regime. It's far from hating Jews. You're hateful if you say I hate. And I pray to God you get the help you need and you find happiness. If I was going around saying that, how quickly would I rightly be condemned? Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez writes about this woman, with a woman with no discernible track record in office. No reason for us to believe she'd be a good congresswoman, but okay, she's liberal, and she's actually very, very attractive. Hey, just like Ocasio-Cortez. Very attractive young woman. Oh, she's young. Well, she's of color. Oh, wait, she's of color. But no discernible track record to say, this person would be a great congresswoman. Ocasio-Cortez writing about this woman who believes that the Jews in Israel have hypnotized the world. Quote, America, if you don't already know about Ihan Omar, it's time to know and support her. She's a modern-day hero, champion from working families and running for Congress in Minnesota. Her election is this Tuesday. Time to push her in. This spirit of anti-Semitism, it floats around. And it goes place to place. Like, remember that movie with John Goodman and Denzel Washington? What was that movie where they were chasing evil spirits? Do you remember that movie? With the song, I can't sing. Time is on my side. Remember that? The Rolling Stones? It was a movie where the spirit could hop from body to body so as to confuse you. And the spirit of anti-Semitism seems to have hopped now squarely into the liberal circle. In fact, it's landed in Seattle with the Seattle City Council, and namely the Bhagwan Shrill Sawant. Now, did I tell you over the weekend, by the way, a liberal accused me of being a racist because of the phrase, the Bhagwan Shrill Sawant? It was a funny conversation. Because the guy said, this is a racist phrase. And I said, no. This is referring to her behaviors. And this, the very arrogant liberal wrote and said, oh, really? Well, do tell. I said, okay, it's referring to the fact that Seattle's getting conned by a woman who uses homeless people to help her maintain political power and muscle. And doing so, she cons the city out of things and gets more power for herself. So it basically says, oh, you just made that up. And I said, no, I didn't. Oh, I can prove it. I wrote a blog post in May of 2018 about this. So I guess that's my turn to be called a racist. So in any case, Ocasio-Cortez, she endorses this woman who's been imbued with the spirit of hatred for the nation of Israel and, in my judgment, the people there, the Jewish people, largely Jewish people. But she's being endorsed by a woman who can't even remember to introduce the guy she's at a speech to introduce. Not only that, the guy she introduced in Hawaii got 6% of the vote. 6 stinking percent. So I'm done ascribing any intelligence to this woman. Listen to her forget to introduce the candidate who she endorsed who got 6% in Hawaii. She had to run back to the stage. Oh, she ended it for herself. Oh, I'm great. Applaud. I'm here to introduce a guy who's going to get 6%. See, I told you it's part tragic. It's part hilarious. We come back on the Todd Herman Show on AM 770 KTTH on the Greater East Side, 94.5 FM. The New York Times continues to embed itself in double standard racism. And this is bad. It's bad for the nation, it's bad for journalists, and I'm going to begin holding journalists to account Any journalist who does not call out the New York Times for what they're doing, you're aiding and abetting racism. Man, this audience is sharp. Text line 7955. Oh, I'm getting this printed out. We'll get into this. I forgot about this. The woman we were just talking about, who Ocasio-Cortez endorsed, Ilhan Omar, it is very likely, in fact, almost a certainty, that she married her brother as a scam to get into the country. This is from a Powerline blog. They were just talking about this woman who's running in Minnesota to be in Congress. I was saying she has no legitimate reason for us to believe she'd be a good congressperson. Well, I lied, or I was wrong. She clearly knows how to break the law. Sort of a prerequisite for being in Congress. Over the weekend in catching up and show prep on Sunday, I came across this article referencing the New York Times, which I will not read or click on because they're a racist publication. I don't read white supremacist pubs. I'm not going to read an anti-white pub. And that's how I see the New York Times these days. The New York Times went to a meeting with Twitter executives that Jack Dorsey, the founder of Twitter, set up. And he brought together 18 colleagues to discuss how to make Twitter safer for its users. Because I don't know if you'd heard this. A bunch of people have been injured and killed while tweeting. Because a lot of times you'll get your hand stuck on those keyboards, and it'll suck you in. And a guy lost an arm. What? Oh. Well, it said safer. Now, the research team is telling me, so they weren't, no one was killed? Well, but certainly people were hurt while they were, what? Oh, safer in terms of no bad think. Got it. All right, thank you. So that's what Jack got people together about. The New York Times put out an article about getting to attend this meeting, and it was all about Alex Jones, who, of course, you know, YouTube has banned, and they banned Dennis Prager, too, basically. Dennis Prager's as mainstream as you can get. They banned his Prager University videos. So the New York Times went to this meeting about should they ban Alex Jones, because Alex Jones is dehumanizing. And uses dehumanizing language. Part of the debate there was they could not agree to what dehumanizing meant. And in not being able to agree to that, they've now decided to create a panel to decide what dehumanizing means. Having not banned Jones, the New York Times writes, some of the employees of Twitter got in touch with the New York Times and said they found that decision pathetic, appalling, and shocking. And the New York Times, of course, is pushing for this ban of Jones, who's dehumanizing. This is the same New York Times that has hired a woman who says that being white is directly proportionate to having a bad dog smell. This is the same woman who has written on countless occasions that we need to cancel white people. And yet Laura Ingraham on Fox went out and I guess delivered a monologue that came off very badly. And David Duke praised. I'll tell you something from my heart. Well, everything's from my heart. But let me tell you this. When I talk about issues like anti-white racism, and it's just racism, just as rank and defiled and disgusting and sick and, yes, dehumanizing as any other form of racism, when I talk about that, it's not uncommon for me to pick up white supremacist followers on Twitter. And I instantly write to them and say, I am not your guy. I have nothing in common with you beyond the fact that I've noticed our society is becoming more adopting of anti-white rhetoric. So if they want to follow me, fine, because I think they might learn that you can be of a political belief and be conservative and call out this hypocrisy, but still not turn to disgusting racism. But Laura Ingraham apparently got praised by David Duke. So David French went out and said that Ingram's comments were not racist. He calls them opportunists. I deeply I don't know Laura Ingraham. I have not, frankly, heard that great of things about Laura Ingraham, but I don't know her. But I wanted to talk a little bit of what David French says here.
I didn't interpret Laura's remarks as racist. I interpreted them as opportunist. And here's what I mean. I think there is a culture that is being cultivated in parts of the right where the goal isn't necessarily to inform so much as it is to inflame.
I have no idea what Laura Ingraham's goals are. I don't know, David French, that you have any idea what her goals are. The monologue she discussed, I have discussed. Not her monologue, but I've said the same thing. And this walks a tightrope because it has in common a notice of a disparity of treatment. Okay, here is the take I've had on this. The open borders approach to a nation even as large as ours risks a neck-breaking quick change in how we treat ourselves and govern ourselves, what we allow and expect from our government, otherwise known as part of our culture. Now, that could be coming from anywhere in the world where people come with a belief that government exists to serve. Okay, that's the quick down and dirty of this. Laura got in trouble for him. And here we are, my favorite part of the program, your emails, social media posts, longer forms of communication with the show. Allows you to share more of yourself with me and your ideas in longer length, therefore more complete, because we do text messages, 800-465-8770, throughout the show, and we try to put those into every single segment so your voice is always heard without you sitting out there waiting on hold, by the way, and Twitter, at Toddy Herman. So if you want to email me, super easy. First initial T, last name Herman, at KTTH.com. Start things off with Daphne in SeaTac. Dear Todd, I see all of us baggage handlers, because we earn minimum wage, are likely to steal an airplane. Or at least that's what I'm getting from the media coverage, focusing on one thing that the gentleman who stole the airplane explained, that he earned minimum wage. I'm happy to have my job. Alaska Airlines, where I work, treats me very well, and I know it's a stopping point for me along the way to something bigger in life. I never met the gentleman who I think committed suicide with that airplane. I am unbelievably happy that no passengers were involved and no one on the ground was killed, but very sad to see my company put through this ringer. Are there things we could have done to prevent this? I'm sure there are, but I don't think something like that's going to happen, and that the chances of this happening again are so low. I just thought it was interesting that the media pulled out of a conversation with a man in desperate circumstances, clearly doing something that just came to him in maybe some form of mental breakdown, that it's the minimum wage we need to worry about. Thanks for everything you do on the show, Todd. A happy listener who's building her life one bag at a time, Daphne. Hey, Daphne, thank you for the note. All work is honorable work, if it's legal work, if it's moral work. And what you're doing, you have the exact right attitude for that. And then I'm deeply sorry that you lost a colleague and someone who maybe had begun to think of that as his life's destination. I don't know him. We don't know enough about him. I hear he was a, you know, terrific guy and beloved. And he said as much when he was talking to air traffic control. But yeah, I've noticed the same thing about the media's focus on the minimum wage. And that's the poll quote, as we say in the business, that I guess they want us to focus on. There's a lot more that he said. We talked about that in the first hour. But it's not things media is comfortable talking about, such as a guy kind of made a joke saying, oh, I probably couldn't get hired as a pilot because I'm a white guy. Well, I hate to say it, but that is a huge message that the overwhelming culture is sending to white young people now. That, look, you know what? It's time for you guys to step aside. You are the problem. Whiteness is an issue, and you can't change it because, dang it, you were born white, and therefore you're always going to be racist. Thank you for the note, Daphne. I appreciate that. Mike from Edmonds on the 99 Tunnel. Hey, Todd, I love your show. I thought you'd get a kick out of a reply from our awesome transportation cabal here in Washington. They recently sent out a survey that included four responses, all of which would increase the power and ability of this criminal organization to continue to garner our money without further input from the taxpayer. I say criminal organization because of the theft currently occurring in the toll lanes that Sideshow Bob is allowing to continue. Here's my response to the survey and the transportation response to my rant. Thought you would want to see their response. And he wrote this letter. I know this will fall on deaf ears because you as a group can't manage a budget and have shown a disregard for the taxpayers who fund your incompetence. We have a very high rate of taxation in Washington, and yet you keep coming back for more. When will you finally be happy with the level of taxation with the poor performance we see from your organization? I say this as a retired fireman. I got my paycheck from the taxpayers and was grateful for the ability to make a comfortable living from the same taxpayers who keep paying for shoddy transportation system. You remind me of the younger fire personnel who really didn't care that the people were paying their salary were having a tough time. These younger people kept going out and pushing for increases in the levy that kept them paid. We would go to houses with no furniture in 2008 because the people who lived there had to sell furniture to pay bills, and the guys I work for would say they don't care and would push for more. I feel you and your organization have the same mindset, and it makes me wonder where your priorities lie. I traveled to Montana, Idaho, and other states that lie in the same latitude, and the roads seem to have fewer potholes and vehicle damaging obstacles than Washington, even though they get more freezes and thaw cycles. Why is that possible? Why can't we copy the success from other transportation systems? I believe this won't ever be possible until we get rid of the people at the top of the organization and the idiotic rules governing our spending, such as the prevailing wage or the 1% for arts requirements. If your job is to subsidize unions, I would like a little more transparency and have you at least admit that's your goal. Again, I'm sure I'm wasting my time not agreeing with one of your preordained choices that either tax us a little bit for a long time or a long time for a little bit, but I just wanted to hear my opinion. I hope the swamp under Washington gets drained, starting with your job. Here's the response they sent, Todd. Thank you for sending us your comments regarding the SR-99 tunnel toll rate options, including your additional ideas for a final toll rate option. We really appreciate your input. On July 17th, the Transportation Commission selected toll rate option A as their preferred toll rate option from additional public input. Your comments were shared with the commissioners for the review and consideration before they made their choice. Yeah, they weren't. No, you want me to say something else? I'm sorry. I wish I could be a bit more optimistic, Mike from Edmonds, but you're exactly right. They didn't care what you thought. They had already made their decision. No, they don't care. And you watch when that tunnel is finally operating and the viaduct is knocked down, it's going to be pure unadulterated hell trying to get into the city. And they're going to be very, very happy about that. Last up, Marsha from Everett on the notion of or the topic of opioids. Dear Todd, I got addicted to prescription pain pills after I had hip surgery. I'm not even that old, but I had it. Here's my question. After I became addicted to opioids, I had a whole bunch of my family members come to me and say, your behavior's changed, you seem to be spending a lot of money, is something going on? And I tried to hide it for several months and then finally admitted that I'd had this problem and had been doctor shopping. Please don't use my last name, as I think that's a crime. I made the decision to not continue to live that way and went straight to my family and said, I really need help. I'm addicted to these pills. And I got help. My dear husband paid for treatment out of his own pocket. We're not rich. We don't have a big insurance plan. He took money out of our retirement in order to pay for me to get off these pills. Now, I've decided to take a retirement job to try to refund some of that money to my husband, who worked his entire life so that we could retire in ease. Now, I may be special. Perhaps I have more willpower than others. But why aren't stories like mine more interesting to the media? Why do I say that? Well, because I know I'm not alone. I know that because I was in a support group with a couple hundred people in it. Wouldn't it be interesting for the media to hear from us as well? Thanks for what you do on the air. I appreciate that. Thank for what you did. No, thank you for taking responsibility in that way. Everybody has their own capabilities. Some people can deal with this in ways better than others. But your story and stories like people like you can make a big difference for others to say, wow, it really can be done. I really could get off this junk. I appreciate the note. We come back on the Todd Herman Show. An exclusive to us. Yet another human being injured by the ridiculous trolley car that is slower than walking, has killed a woman, And recently, Jelly Durka says they purchased 10 new cars for $52 million, and they do not fit on the tracks or in the garage. Yep. Another victim of the Seattle trolley next on the Todd Herman Show.